We are in a series of messages that I'm going to actually conclude today, and the theme has been living 24/6 in a 24/7 world. We hear that phrase 24/7 a lot in our culture, and it basically means to go nonstop, and that's how a lot of people in our culture live. They go nonstop, and even many believers have gotten caught up in 24/7 living. I'm stuck there on the projector, so maybe there we go. Thank you. What I've been emphasizing during this series is that God did not create us to function best living 24/7, but he created us to function best living 24/6. And the difference means that one day a week we declare, I'm not living 24/7 today. It's really remembering the Sabbath. And that's what we've been talking about. And I've been asking you the same questions each week just for you to reflect on. Does it seem like your life has become busier than it should be? Maybe more complicated than it should be? Does it seem like rarely do you begin your week fully rested or refreshed? And if yes is your answer to any of those, then it may be that God wants you to do a little bit of adjusting. The foundation for the Sabbath after God Sabbathing after creation, he gave the commandment as commandment 4 of the 10 commandments. In Exodus 20, beginning with verse 8, he said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. He said, remember. It's the only commandment of the 10 that he says to remember, perhaps because this one is the easiest to forget. And when he says keep it holy, the word holy means keep it different. What happens that day should look different than what happens the rest of the days. It's separated from something to be separated to something. And then he goes on to say, in it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. So when it came to Sabbath, everybody was on the same ground. Rich, poor, male, female, young, old, even the guests in the home and the animals were a part of Sabbath. And then he goes on to say, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath and hallowed it. And so that was the foundation of the Sabbath, is God Sabbathing on the seventh day and then passing that example on to you and I to follow. We've noted that Jesus continued to observe the Sabbath in the Gospels, only his emphasis was the spirit of the Sabbath versus the letter of the law, and we'll touch on that in a few moments. We saw the early church, Acts 17, Acts 18, and other places continued to meet together for corporate worship on the Sabbath. And then a really important principle for applying the Sabbath under the new covenant is that Paul taught us in Colossians 2:16 that we're not to judge each other regarding Sabbaths. And in the 14th chapter of Romans, he got into how each of us are to develop our own convictions and follow them without trying to push our convictions on others. And I think that's a vital principle to apply under the new covenant. Now, how can we pull off 24/6 in a 24/7 world? I mentioned before that our culture is not just going to hand 24/6 living back to us. We're going to have to exercise some intentionality. We're going to have to realize to live this way, I have to be willing to live differently than many around me are living to experience what many around me are not experiencing. So it may take a little bit of courage. But main things we emphasized is to make Jesus the Lord of your Sabbath. In other words, submit it to him, what he wants that day in your life to look like. And then, as we just mentioned, focus more on the spirit of the Sabbath than the letter of the law. And we saw that the spirit of the Sabbath can be summarized with 3 R's, and they are reverence, rest, and renewal. The reverence part, Jesus observed the Sabbath by coming together with the people of God to worship on Sabbath. That's what the Jews did in the old under the old covenant. The word was holy convocation, which means a public gathering. And so the first part of Sabbath is that we come together with our church family and worship God. And then after that, a priority is rest. And then the result of reverence and rest should be renewal. And so I emphasize that, you know, one of the ways you can sort of evaluate how your Sabbath is going is simply ask the question, do you start your week refreshed? If you do, then probably your Sabbath is going well. If you do not start the week typically refreshed, then maybe you need to go back and seek the Lord and maybe make a few tweaks. A few Sabbath preparation considerations that we looked at would be considering what might you normally do on the Sabbath that you could really do another day, or maybe not at all, if you really purpose to. We talked about thinking through some maintenance issues, miscellaneous issues, and then other areas to think through. Or what about media? What about texting, email, internet, socializing? And we emphasize the difference between life-giving relationships and life-draining relationships. And then there's things like entertainment and recreation. And the thing I emphasize is I'm not suggesting you not do any of those things. What I am suggesting is these are areas to seek the Lord about. And it's not all or nothing. Maybe God just wants you to make put a few boundaries on some of those areas. It might not be 0%, but it may be that a few areas you would benefit from some adjusting. And so that's all I mentioned. And again, not every Sabbath necessarily has to look the same. Now, in this last message, in this series, I'm going to deal with a few different questions. And one of those is, won't I get bored? some of you might be thinking, man, if I don't do some of this stuff that I would normally do, that sounds kind of boring. And we probably have two different kinds of people here today in terms of our wiring. Some of you are like, bored? What is that? I wished I could experience that. Your life is like so busy that you almost like covet being bored. You would like to be bored and see what that's like. So some of you are that way, but others of you are like, this sounds, boring. And I want to just share something here that's going to be a little bit abrasive maybe, and intentionally so just prepare yourself. But I'm saying it this way because I really want to stimulate your thinking. Because there are some people who seem to live their life like solitude is an enemy. There are some people who they have to have constant motion, noise, movement around them, or they go crazy. Some people, for example, if they're home alone, the TV has to be on or music has to be playing whether they are paying any attention or not. And some people, that no matter where they are, you see earbuds in their ears pumping sound into their brain. They cannot hardly function with solitude or with silence. And people like that may especially think, wow, the Sabbath thing sounds a little bit boring. But here's the thing that I want to just say to you, and that's this. If that's you, if you're the kind of person who sees solitude as sort of an enemy and you can hardly stand it and you just have to have constant noise or movement or activity, it could be the problem is you're the boring one. Reality is that probably the situation is that you have a boring relationship with God, and that's the problem. And masking that boredom with noise, activity, and motion is not going to deal with the core problem. But here's my encouragement to you. And that is, if you will make a decision, wait a minute, I'm going to learn solitude. I'm not going to be the kind of person who I have to have noise pumping into my head 24/7. I'm going to learn to back off at least one day a week, and I'm going to figure out how to make my relationship with God something more than it is. If you will determine that, if you will persevere, I am convinced you are going to find God in a fresh way on the other side of that boredom. There's a promise in Isaiah 58, 13 and 14 that basically says that if you make God's agenda your agenda on Sabbath, he says this, then the Lord will be your delight. So God doesn't, God, if we really get to know him, he is anything but boring. And he wants to break through that boredom thing and bring you to a place where you literally delight in him. But you may have to persevere and fight through boredom for a bit, but I believe you'll find God on the other side. And so it could be that experiencing a little bit of boredom on the Sabbath may be in order. A second question I want to look at is, what if I can't afford the time off? I mean, I'm really busy and I never get it all done anyway. And to think about slowing down one day in seven, some of you might be thinking, I just can't do that. I just got too much to do. I can't afford to take the time off. Well, one thing to consider is this. If you're that busy, I can guarantee you one thing, and that's you're doing stuff God never assigned you to do. God never gave us all so much assignment that only living 24/7 would allow us to fulfill it. So if you can't afford that one day of stopping or slowing down, then maybe you need to relook at your calendar and figure out, what am I doing that God never asked me to do? And maybe I can either eliminate or at least cut back on some of those things. But looking at this from another perspective, can you afford not to take the time to sharpen your life's axe? I gave a story about a young guy and an old guy who were in a competition to see who could cut the most wood with an axe. And the young guy noticed the older guy would stop every once in a while. And so his thinking was, when he stops, I'm going to keep going. That way I'll win, because I'll be working harder and longer than he will. And when the contest ended and they compared, the old guy won and the younger guy was like, I don't get it. You stopped and I never stopped. I don't see how you could win. And the old guy said to him, oh, well, when I stopped, I was sharpening my axe. And so because he sharpened his axe, it really didn't cost him time to stop. It actually made him more efficient. So that in the time that he wasn't stopping but was working, he was more efficient and he actually accomplished more by stopping. And I want to suggest to you that that's what Sabbath is like. It's taking time to sharpen life's axe and to trust that if I take that time to sharpen my life's axe, I will be more productive the other 6 days. And so I can take that time. We pointed out an interesting survey where a group of people who were Sabbath followers lived about a dozen years longer than those who weren't. And when you do the math and figure out how much longer they lived and divided it by 365, it came up to basically the same amount of time they had spent in their lifetime Sabbathing was how much longer they lived. So, you know, in other words, it came out to every day they practiced Sabbath was basically another day their life was extended, and vice versa. And so, in a way, Sabbath taking doesn't really cost us because it makes us more efficient and contributes to our well-being. Don't be surprised if either the manna you gather on the Sabbath rots or evaporates or is non-existent to begin with. And that statement comes from Exodus 16. And basically the story was that the Israelites were in the wilderness. God was providing for them by giving them manna each day. It was a type of bread that he put on the ground from the heavens. And he told them on day six to gather twice as much so that on the Sabbath they would have enough to eat without having to go out and gather on the Sabbath. But any other day, if they gathered more than they needed, it would rot. And of course, some gathered more than they needed and tested God, and sure enough, it rotted. Others went out on the Sabbath day to try to get more, to try to produce more, and here they found there wasn't any. Could it be that one of the things God was teaching us from that whole thing is that whatever you and I try to produce on Sabbath is not going to be fruitful? Could it be that when we try to produce and God's called us into a season of stop or rest, that really it's not going to be fruitful, it's going to rot, it's going to evaporate? Could it be that when we go out and try to produce, whatever we produce really will not have any substance that really contributes anything of real meaning to our life? Pat gave an exhortation about the tithe, and really, if you think about it, there are some similarities in tithing and in observing Sabbath in that they tend to be counterintuitive to logic. To think I can get done in 7 days or in 6 days as much as I can get done in seven by not working one day, again, doesn't really make sense to the mind. Or to think that if I give 10% to God through my local church, I only have 90% left, and that's 10% less. And so it's counterintuitive, and yet when we understand the principles of faith, we realize, oh, no, what it's really about is if I obey God and trust God, God can make me as productive in 6 days as I could be in seven without him empowering me. And really, I mean, is it that hard to really believe? I mean, are any of you really getting that much done in 7 days? I think most of the time, probably a lot of us, we end up our week and like, that's all I got done. My to-do list grew. It didn't go down. So probably most of us were like, well, we're really not that efficient to begin with. Maybe it's not that much of a stretch to believe God could make me as effective in six as I am in seven. And same with money. You know, is it really that difficult to, if God could create the heavens and the earth, would it really be that hard for him to take 90% and open the windows of heaven and pour out blessing and rebuke the devourer and make that 90 go as far as 100 would without his blessing? Well, let's look at another question. Is it really possible to actually live 24/6 when we live in a 24/7 culture? And I want to share about a couple of businesses that have decided they're going to do business 24/6. Hobby Lobby is one of those. They are now in St. Cloud. It's a business started in 1970 by David and Barbara Green when they took out a $600 loan to begin making miniature picture frames out of their home. I went on their website, and on their website, it lists their values, and here's part of what I pulled off of there. It says their values include honoring the Lord in all we do by operating the company in a manner consistent with biblical principles, including being closed on Sundays. I mean, that's on their website. You might think, well, How is that working for them? I mean, are they able to compete with similar companies that are running 24/7? Well, today, Hobby Lobby has more than 800 stores. They are the largest privately owned arts and crafts retailer in the world, with approximately 32,000 employees operating in 47 states. They have a corporate complex in Oklahoma City it's a manufacturing, distribution, and office complex that's a mere 9.2 million square feet. Not $9.2 million, 9.2 million square feet. I think that's like a town in Minnesota, isn't it? I mean, that's like amazing. Well, you might think, well, are they keeping up? Well, in 2017, they opened 63 new stores. What year did the one here open? Like a year before that, maybe. I don't know what year, but anyway, they opened 63 new stores last year, and they're planning on opening 60 new locations and hiring 2,500 new employees in 2018. I guess it's possible to do business 24/6 in a 24/7 world. Here's another one, Chick-fil-A. How many of you have ever eaten at Chick-fil-A? Isn't it great all these things are coming to our, you know, city? Well, Chick-fil-A was started by Truett Cathy, who, by the way, died in 2014 at the age of 93. But when he started Chick-fil-A, he led a life that was centered on biblical principles and family. And he gave a lot of his time to youth ministry. And a part of that was even the people he hired. But he decided to have Chick-fil-A be closed on Sundays to observe the Christian Sabbath. And that was a real battle for him because a lot of Chick-fil-A's are inside malls. And imagine mall owners if stores in the mall don't want to be open Sundays, and that's a part of what, you know, attracts customers. And so he took a lot of heat from mall owners wanting him to be open Sundays, and he held his ground and refused to open Sundays. Well, how has that worked? Have they been able to compete? Well, today Chick-fil-A has the highest same-store sales and is the largest quick-serve chicken restaurant chain in the United States based on annual system-wide sales. They currently have 2,200 stores in 46 states and are worth a mere $1.6 billion. I think they've done okay operating 24/6. Here's one that probably you've not heard of unless you're into high-end photography or video. It's B&H Photo Video. And the reason you may not have heard of this is it's not a large chain like the other businesses. It's actually a single company in New York City that started in 1973. The owner, Herman Schreiber, is a Jew. And so he believes in observing the Sabbath. For him, that's, you know, Friday night to Saturday night. And so his store is closed to be able to observe the Sabbath. And a fair amount of their customers come through the doors, but more and more of their customers are ordering things online. And it's interesting that they will not ship or take orders between Friday evening and Saturday evening in order to observe the Sabbath. So even you know, through their web service, they are observing the Sabbath. You might be thinking, well, how's that working for them? I mean, they're not a huge chain. Well, they have more than 2,000 employees, and they're now the largest non-chain photo and video equipment store in the U.S., and they're visited by more than 5,000 customers every day, and again, with a bulk of their business happening online. I want to give one more story. This one is not a business. It's an individual, and this man's name was Eric Little, and his story was featured in the film back in 1981, Chariots of Fire. Any of you remember Chariots of Fire? A few of you. Maybe some of you will want to check that out. But Eric Little was a Scottish young runner who was going to be representing Great Britain in the 1924 Olympics in Paris. But he was a devout Christian, and he was committed to observing Sabbath, and this may blow some of you away when you consider where our culture's at today. But he had such a conviction about Sabbath that he would never train or compete on a Sunday. And so he's getting ready to compete in the 1924 Olympics in Paris, and his race is the 100-meter sprint. Well, he finds out that the heat that he's supposed to run in for the 100-meter sprint is when? It's on a Sunday. And so he's like, then I'm not running. Well, you can imagine the attention that got in headlines all over the world where we're talking about that. Well, one of his teammates had won the silver medal in the 400-meter hurdles. And that guy was supposed to run also in the 400-meter sprint. But because he respected Eric Little's conviction, and because he had already won a medal, he decided to give his place in the 400-meter run, which was going to be the following Thursday, to Eric Little. Now, what was Eric Little doing on that Sunday when his 100-meter heat was taking place? He was actually preaching at the Parish Church of Scotland that Sunday and used as his text Isaiah 40, which says, "But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." So instead of running in that race to try to qualify for the final heat to pursue a gold medal, he was in church bringing that message. Now, if you know much about running, you know that if you train for the 100 meter, the 400 meter is a whole different animal. I mean, it's just not like, well, if you can run the 100 fast, certainly you'll do fine in the 400 meter. So it was pretty unusual to switch events that drastically. And the Americans were expected to dominate that 400 meter sprint that day. And the American coach actually told the American runners, you know, "You don't have anything to worry about with this guy. I mean, he's used to training for the 100 meters. So, you know, he's probably not going to be, you know, too much of a threat." Now, before I tell you what happened, and some of you know the story, but before I tell you what happened, I do want to say this. Whatever happened, it's not always about how it turns out. It's about doing the right thing. You know, too often I think we look at stories like this, and if the end turns out good, well, then it's good. But sometimes you do the right thing, and you don't get the results you were hoping for. Sometimes you do the right thing, and it costs you. Sometimes you do the right thing, and you pay a price. So this isn't about doing the right thing if you think you'll get the results you want. Life is about doing the right thing no matter what it costs us, and more often than not, God makes it right in the end. Well, to let you know how it all turned out, he won the gold medal in the 400 meter. And so you may want to check that out. I want to tell you some Jesus Sabbath stories. They're the best ones. And what happened by the time Jesus came on the scene is the religious leaders had taken the Sabbath and they had added a bunch of rules. And they were rules that put people in bondage. They didn't help people experience greater worship and rest and refreshing. It caused people to feel like, you know, they were in bondage. And Jesus would not give in to their rules. And so he didn't mind, you know, breaking their rules because they weren't rules that God had given. And so often Jesus would do things on the Sabbath that would get them really upset and they would have some kind of clash. And I love all those stories because he was willing to stand up to that system and not give in. Again, he was about the spirit of it, not the letter of it. And so here's a couple stories. One is from Mark 2, verses 23 to 28, where Jesus and his disciples on the Sabbath are walking through a grain field, and the disciples are really hungry. They haven't had anything to eat, and so they just reach out and grab some grain and eat it. And, you know, no big deal. I mean, they weren't, you know, trying to earn extra money. They didn't punch a clock. You know, they didn't work up a sweat. All they did was grab some grain and eat it. And of course, the religious leaders confronted Jesus, you know, saying, "Well, you know, that's work and they're violating the Sabbath." And Jesus' answer was, "Well, don't you remember reading about when David, you know, Israel's greatest king, don't you remember when he and his men were really hungry and they actually went into the house of God and ate the showbread, which typically only the priests were to eat? Remember that? And there's no indication that they were guilty of violating the Sabbath. And so if they didn't violate the Sabbath going into the temple eating the showbread, I think we're good with my disciples eating a little bit of grain." And of course, they didn't like that answer too well. And it's in that context that he ended that exchange by saying to them, "The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath." They had reversed that. And then, and I don't know if we can grasp what this would have been like, but then he said to them, Therefore, the Son of Man is also the Lord of the Sabbath. So picture it this way. They're trying to push all these rules on everybody. And what Jesus was basically saying is, you guys got it wrong. I make the rules. I make the rules. I decide what can be done and not be done. I mean, can you imagine how popular that was to tell them, it's up to me. I'm the one in charge of this thing. I mean, I'm sure they, you know, well, we know what happened. They decided they were going to kill him because of it. Here's another story, Luke 13, 10 to 17, where it's a Sabbath and Jesus is worshiping with the people of God, and a woman is present. And she's had a spirit of infirmity 18 years, and she's all bent over. I mean, we're not talking just like a little backache or a little headache here. We're talking about somebody who has not stood straight up for 18 years. And spirit of infirmity implies some demonic activity that was a part of this. And so Jesus ministers to her, sets her free. She stands up for the first time in 18 years, and she's worshiping God. And these religious leaders, again, are confronting Jesus, accusing him of violating the Sabbath because he was working on the Sabbath to heal her, which is just incredible that they would think that. And so Jesus, as I mentioned last week, I don't think he really worked up any sweat to, you know, bring healing or deliverance to people. And again, he's not out walking all over the place, seeing if he can find somebody in need to help. He is simply observing Sabbath. And while he's observing the Sabbath, when he sees human need, he reaches out and is compassionate. But I love his answer here. He says, well, and I'm paraphrasing, he goes, now, you take your animals and loose them, and you lead them out to water them on the Sabbath, right? Oh, yeah, we do that. They need water. We're compassionate for our animals. Well, and when you do that, you're not violating the Sabbath, correct? Oh, correct. We're not violating the Sabbath. We're not working. We're just watering our animals so that they can be refreshed. And Jesus, what Jesus is basically saying is, yeah, and that's just what I did. I just took one of God's creation, and I loosed her and brought her to a place where she could be refreshed. I mean, how are they going to, you know, say anything about that? But I left my favorite one for the end here. This is my, well, no, this is the second favorite one. This guy was healed at the Gate Beautiful there, and he had been crippled 38 years. And Jesus says, take up your bed and walk. And when you read the text, it seems to imply that after Jesus healed him, Jesus kind of incognito just slipped through the crowd and disappeared. Because by the time the religious leaders saw what was going on and talked to this guy, Jesus is gone. But what they do, and again, it's hard to believe these guys were that hypocritical, but they were accusing this guy of violating the Sabbath because he had taken up his bed and was walking with it. Now, if you know anything about beds there, we mean a rug. We don't mean a bed. We mean a rug. And so here this guy was laying on a little rug, and he couldn't, before that, he couldn't move anywhere. And Jesus says, you know, roll up your rug and go home. And so he gets up, he's healed. He's rolling up this rug, walking with it, and they're accusing him because he's carrying his rug home of violating the Sabbath. I mean, if he had left it there, they'd probably accuse them of littering or something. But, you know, crazy, crazy thing. Okay, here's now my favorite one. So again, they kept confronting Jesus for healing on the Sabbath. And this answer is just brilliant. Jesus, again, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically says, now, according to the law of Moses, when a male is born on the eighth day, that male is supposed to be circumcised, right? Yes. So if you don't circumcise a male on the eighth day, you would be violating the law of Moses, right? Right. We follow the law of Moses. We circumcise on the eighth day. And then Jesus set him up. And then here's his thing. Well, okay, so what happens when occasionally that eighth day falls on a Sabbath? Now tell me, what are you going to do? Because if you don't circumcise that child on the eighth day because it's on the Sabbath, you have just violated the law of Moses. But if you do circumcise that child on the eighth day when it's Sabbath, you are violating the Sabbath. So which one are you going to violate, you hypocrites? And of course, they had no answer. And I think what Jesus was basically saying is, I'm healing on the Sabbath, and you are accusing me of violating the Sabbath, but you cut on the Sabbath, and you're not guilty of working on the Sabbath. Get a life, I think, is what he was basically saying to them. But here was the takeaway to all of that, and that is that as you observe Sabbath and you encounter human need to reach out and minister compassionately to that need is not a violation of the Sabbath. That's what we see all throughout Jesus' confrontation with the religious leaders. And, you know, something I don't think they considered, but think about this. The people that Jesus healed and delivered, if the spirit of the Sabbath was worship and rest and refreshing, don't you think those that God healed and delivered probably that day entered into a deeper level of Sabbathing? I mean, don't you think probably that day was a special day of worship, a new sense of rest, a new sense of refreshing? They had just been healed. They had just been delivered. They had just been set free. Talk about being able to enter a deep level of Sabbath. I got one more point and then we'll close. And this may sound a little bit of an oxymoron, but my last point is work at rest. Work at rest. Now, again, some of you, the way you're wired is rest comes easy. You're like, bring it on. I'm good at that. Others of you, you're like, working is easier than resting. I mean, it's harder for you to rest than it is to work. So for some of you who are wired that way, you may have to learn the skill of rest. You may have to work at rest. Let's check it out. Hebrews 4, verse 1. Therefore, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. So there is a promise of rest that God's made available to every one of us. And what he basically says is don't be satisfied without it. Don't accept anything less from the full rest that I want to give to you. And then verse 3, for we who have believed do enter that rest. So we enter this rest by faith. I mean, have you ever put your faith out for a deeper level of rest? That's part of the exhortation here. Go after this thing. Don't settle for less. Put your faith out there for it. Verse 4, for he has spoken in a certain place, which was Genesis 2:2, of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And so again, that is tied into the whole idea of Sabbath. Now, I believe in Hebrews 4 here, he is talking about a Sabbath rest, the one day in seven. But I believe there's also a broader application, and that is that in God, it's possible to enter rest any day you need it. So even on the other six, you don't have to wait till Sabbath to get some rest. There is a refreshing we can experience from the presence of the Lord, no matter what day it is. And then he goes on to say, verse 7, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. Do you know what causes a hard heart? What causes a hard heart is when you hear the voice of God and don't do anything about it. That's what makes our heart hard, when we hear his voice and we don't do anything about it. And I want to challenge you as we get ready to draw this to a close. During this series, have you been hearing the voice of God? Has he been talking to you about some adjustments, about learning 24/6 living? Are you hearing his voice, and what will you do with it? He goes on to say, there remains therefore a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. Now, notice that the definition of rest is ceasing from our work, ceasing from our normal routine. But I want to broaden the application a bit. Could it be that some of us not only need to learn to cease from our works, but maybe to cease from our works performance orientation? A works performance orientation says, I got to keep doing stuff to get God to be okay with me. To feel okay about my relationship with God, I've got to do. Or to be accepted amongst my peers or my family or whoever it is, I got to do. And sometimes the reason we can't stop is, if I stop, will God still love me? Will he still accept me? If I stop, what are others going to think? And I think God is saying here, not only stop from your works, but stop from that performance orientation thing that says God will only love me and accept me if I do more. God's saying, no, that's not true. Doing more isn't going to make him love you or accept you anymore. So just stop and don't worry about whether what other people are thinking about you, or that if you just do more, perform more, get more, do more, they'll somehow be impressed with you. Give that up. That's a part of our ceasing. And then he ends with this, let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest. My paraphrase of that is, therefore, let's work to rest. Let's work to enter rest. Would you stand with me, please? Andrew Wiley said, the Sabbath is the link between the paradise which has passed away and the paradise which is yet to come. And I want to ask you, as we close the service today, is God speaking to you to make some adjustments? They may be major adjustments, they may be minor, but is God wanting you to learn how to live 24/6 in a 24/7 world? And Matthew 11:28 and 29, Jesus said this, come to me, all you who are labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest, and you will find rest for your souls. And I think Jesus is saying that to some of you today. I want to give you rest. I want to give you refreshing. And I actually want to close the service by praying over those who, like, that's me, man. I could use just a little bit of rest, a little bit of peace, a little bit of refreshing in my life. And so I'm going to ask you, as I close in prayer, if that's you and you're hearing Jesus call you to that place, I want you just to step forward. I'm not going to ask anything individually over you. I'm just going to pray for as a whole for all those who come. So as I just wait a few moments, Mike, you can start playing something. If you're like, I could use some of that rest, some of that peace, just step out and come. And I just want to pray for all who come, that today will be a time of refreshing for you. Close in prayer here, and as I do, prayer teams, unless you're already up here, make your way to the front, and after the closing prayer, maybe the prayer teams can just come and lay hands on a few of you and just believe for an impartation today of refreshing. There's a verse in Acts 3 that talks about that times of refreshing may come from the presence of the Lord. And let's believe that today, that as we are in his presence, we're going to get some refreshing in our soul. And so those who are on prayer teams, you can feel free to come and maybe take a few moments to minister to these that have come. After the prayer, you're welcome to go or hang out for a few minutes if you want. I'll probably come down and pray for a few people as well. If you need prayer, something other than our topic here today, we will have some teams up here, and they'd be happy to pray with you. Father, I thank you for the invitation to come to you. when we're weary. Lord, some are weary today because of busy schedules. Some are weary because of some battles they have faced in their circumstances. Lord, you know every story here. You know what each one of us are walking through in our lives. But I thank you, no matter what we're walking through, we're hearing your voice today saying, come to me. I want to help bear that load. I want to take some of the weight off you. I want to breathe into your soul my peace, my refreshing, my joy. So Lord, right now, I just pray for a supernatural manifestation of your peace, your rest, your refreshing. Lord, I pray that every person who's come up here today, that at some point today, they're going to like, wow, do I feel a freshness? I feel a new energy, a new sense of well-being. We trust you for it. We put our faith out there for that. Lord, I also pray that if you're wanting any of us to make any adjustments in our life, that your Holy Spirit will guide us and that we will hear your voice and have the grace, the wisdom, the courage to make whatever adjustments you are speaking to us in order to walk out this message, that we might experience greater refreshing in our lives. I pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Those of you who have come, if you want to stay and be prayed for more, you're welcome to. If you need to slip out, feel free to do that. Otherwise, you are dismissed. And if anyone else wants to come for prayer before you go, make your way to the front and find someone up here to pray with you.